Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for the federal government attorney navigating the complex intersection of acquisition and fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
I'm Ed Callahan.
And I'm Major Jason Floyd. Together, we're your co-hosts. On this episode of the Far and Beyond, we'll discuss a major development from this summer, GAO's response to the Section 885 of the fiscal year 2025 NDAA.
This mandate required GAO to submit proposals on three critical areas. First, enhanced pleading standards. Second, protest cost benchmarks. And third, a fee-shifting process. This is always a hot topic for federal attorneys, especially those that deal with contracts and litigation.
And I'm eager to dig into this. For context, though, I think it's important to start with an understanding that this is just old wine in a new bottle, right? Congress has passed similar legislative requests in fiscal year 2009 and fiscal year 2017 NDAAs. The critics often talk about frivolous protests, but the data consistently show that GAO protests are valuable. Section 885 is just the latest attempt at limitations, but what's the Latin word for this? Doubtful. Yeah, I'm doubtful that anything special will happen.
I don't speak Latin, but I'm not sure that's the word you were looking for. But let's take a quick pause and assume that not only do I know what Section 885 and bid protests work with, but I'm not a wine guy. So for myself and others listening, what's the foundational role of the GAO bid protest function?
Ed, you're not a wine guy?
Not a wine guy.
In Italy, man.
I married an Italian woman. She just tells me what to drink, and she's always right.
Of course. So the GAO bid protest function exists because of the Competition and Contracting Act of 1984, also known as CECA. And that one is real, not like Chow or FPIDS.
Chow's real.
CECA establishes GAO as an objective, independent forum intended to provide for the inexpensive and expeditious resolution of protests against federal procurements. They are a part of the legislative branch, not the judiciary or executive branch.
Yeah, so I like to conceptualize GAO as sort of a fast lane for bid protests, right? The Court of Federal Claims, another forum which is available to protesters. That's what I think of as the default forum to litigate these things. So you can't go into just federal district court when you want to litigate a protest. You got to go in a specific forum. But Congress wanted to create a method for low cost and quick resolutions of bid protests. So it empowered this legislative agency that you mentioned, Ellie, GAO, with the authority to settle this narrow class of bid protests.
Okay, so I'm here in Congress, I'm here in legislative. So does that mean that their decisions are not binding on us under the executive?
So to me, this is a super interesting question, Ed. I think it's a constitutional question. Can Congress vest a legislative agency with a sort of a quasi-judicial authority to bind the executive through its decision? I don't know, right? Congress seems to have avoided the question, though, entirely by creating the scheme that we have now, meaning that it's non-binding. However, CECA does require GAO to report to Congress whenever a federal agency does not fully implement the recommendation.
So it's like the Pirate's Code. It's, you know, it's kind of like guidelines.
Parley?
Exactly. It's from Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's worth a rewatch.
Which one? There's like 17 of them.
No, the first one, when she calls for parley and they bring her to the bridge.
And they're like, and they're it's like, more
but
like
it's the Pirate's Code. We have to bring her. They're more of guidelines. And then he pushes her off the boat or something crazy like that. Yeah. And in this case, the GAO is the Pirate's Code, and we're just kind of, anyway.
Thank you.
You get it. Okay, but is there a way to settle it? I would imagine just like every other federal case, and heck, even the state cases that I worked on, there's usually settlements or just agreements to follow certain outcomes, rules, recommendations. Is that how this works?
Yeah, and I think that's another reason, Ed, why you don't see non-implementation. You don't see a lot of reports from GAO going to Congress to tattletale on agencies because it just doesn't happen, right? We've got corrective action. We've got things that the agency can do to make their protests go away, essentially.
So yeah, we don't have a lot of non-implementation, but the overall trend is favorable for those concerned about volume. GAO reports that bid protests have steadily declined by 32% over the last 10 years. Protests of DOW procurement specifically have fallen even more sharply by 48% over the same period. So furthermore, less than 2% of DOW procurements, at most 1.5%, were protested between fiscal years 2020 and 2024. Those numbers include contracts over the micro-purchase threshold, but do not include task or delivery orders.
to me, those numbers are a bit misleading because that's just the GAO numbers, right? So there's other forums at which you can file a protest. One of them, agencies, they're not even required to keep their protest stats. And then you've got the COFC, who actually those protests have gone up in recent years. I think over the same period that you mentioned, Elliot, something like 100% increase. It was like 120, 140 back in 2020. Now we're sitting in fiscal year 24 at like 260-ish. So it's a big increase. And so I think we'll get into a little later about sort of like, is this going to have an effect? And, you know, spoiler alert, I think it will, right?
So the GAO numbers are going down, which is good. That's the direction that we want them to go. Or I assume that they would make our life a lot easier when we're in the procurement and acquisition realm. But it sounds like the COFC numbers are going up. What are the major differences between the two? Why would someone choose to take a COFC appeal as opposed to a GAO case?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's interesting that you have this decline in GAO and then you have this increase in COFC because there are differences, right? I think the leading cause that people talk about the most from industry is the discovery, right? But like putting that aside, if we step back, like why is Congress even interested in increasing these enhanced pleading standards in the first place? And it's, you know, it's the thing is frivolous protest. But if we're seeing a decline in GAO protest, does that mean we're ultimately going to see even more of a decline in GAO protest and even more of an increase in COFC? So I don't know. I think that does lend itself to a longer discussion about why we have what we have in the NDAA.
All right, so let's move on to the most concrete change stemming from Section 885, the enhanced pleading standards.
So Congress is directing GAO in this process, and they're directing them across the board. They're a legislative body. Did they specify anything for the Department of War? Was there anything specifically directed that we should be paying attention to as uniformed and civilian members of the Department of War?
So that was the mandate, was to enhance pleading standards for the Department of War. But GAO concluded that to reduce ambiguity, it wasn't just going to change pleading standards for Department of War contracts. It was going to change and update for all protests. GAO found that its previous decisions regarding pleadings were sometimes perceived as very leading to confusion among parties. So this was the way that they can just level the playing field across the board, was to say, nope, this is a new standard going forward for all protests that come to our forum.
And just to back up, Ed, right? So Congress doesn't dictate to GAO what its pleading standard is, right? Mm-hmm. What it does in CICA is it says, hey, GAO, you have the authority to essentially announce and implement regulations with respect to the bid protest system. And so this is, I think, Congress's indication to GAO. It's like, hey, man, we perceive your pleading standard as too slight because of the concern about frivolous protest. Can you consider, before we enact a legislative directive, can you consider raising it?
GAO being asked to rule on bid protests when they're coming through, those numbers were all going down. Congress still saw fit to tell them to take a look at their standards and try and eliminate frivolous protests as they saw them?
Yeah, it seems strange on one hand. On the other hand, you could see a universe in which Congress says, okay, your numbers are going down, but we still think that there's a sufficient number of frivolous protests that need to be dealt with. And so this is their like, hey, don't confuse, for lack of a better word, right, the number going down with the fact that we still have this issue to deal with.
So that makes sense. One does not necessarily cure the other. They want to make sure they're getting at the end result.
You got it.
All right. So let's talk about the old standard before we move into what the new standard is.
Sure. So the GAO's rules currently found at 4 CFR Part 21 require a protester to, quote, set forth a detailed statement of the legal and factual grounds of the protest, unquote. That's a lot like the notice pleading standard in federal courts, where a plaintiff merely has to aver a short and plain statement of the claim, the little jingle that some of us learned in law school.
The good times I remember from CivPro back in law school. So are we talking about the TWIC ball, the Twombly-Iqbal plausibility standard?
You got it, Ed, yeah.
So the really low pleading standard, just to make sure that you're not going on a fishing expedition when you're coming out.
You got it. So essentially, though, GAO has said in its remarks to Congress in July that standard, although that's the regulatory standard, is implemented through its bid protest decisions to essentially mean allegations or evidence sufficient to establish a likelihood of improper agency action. So yeah, no fishing expeditions, no information and belief protests. There's got to be allegations or evidence sufficient. That was how the bid protest case law, if you will, fleshed that standard out. Yeah, Ellie, why don't you tell us about the new standard though?
So GAO suggested that it's going to require protesters to provide, at a minimum, credible allegations that are supported by evidence and are sufficient, if uncontradicted, to establish the likelihood of the protester's claim of improper agency action.
All right, so the key takeaway for us as practitioners is that allegations must now be supported by evidence, moving away from the confusing allegations or evidence tension that previously existed. This enhancement clarifies that something more than bare allegations or claims based on information and belief, quote unquote, is required to survive dismissal and move toward obtaining access to the administrative record.
Exactly. This proposed enhanced standard is intended to reduce ambiguity and bolster GAO's ability to resolve protests that are either not credible or unsupported by adequate evidence. Protests that don't meet this robust pleading standard are typically dismissed early in the process, usually prior to the agency being required to file a report and produce relevant documents.
So this is going right to the heart of what they're trying to stop with the frivolous lawsuits. People can't just go in, file bid protests, then get the information that says, oh, I was actually right about this. Let's keep going. They're requiring that you walk in the door with enough information to make a sufficient pleading.
I think so, but I think this is where the cynic in me comes out, right? Because how fast can GAO really rule on a motion to dismiss? All right, so we all know, right, the clock starts when the protest comes in. The agency has about 30 days in which to file its report. And before that, as soon as the agency's ready, it can file this motion to dismiss, right? Request dismissal.
Usually within like the first 15 days.
Right.
When you see it.
Right. But then like if the GAO doesn't rule on that before the timeline for the agency report is due, then you've got to submit the agency report. And so unless you ask for an extension pursuant to the motion to dismiss, and that all comes out, right? But there is a universe in which this new distinction doesn't actually matter because of the timelines associated with how tight the protest window is and the whole overall goal of, you know, disposing of the protest within 100 days. So a protester walks in, files their protest. Agency submits a motion to dismiss around day 15 or so. GAO's got about 15 days before the agency's going to have to file the report to rule on that motion to dismiss. And maybe it's a really complicated motion, and so maybe it ends up that the agency has to submit this to the protester anyway. Oh, and then voila, they amend their protest. They've got new grounds. They get this evidence, right? So I don't know.
So it could still be used as a fishing expedition if you're moving that quickly. Do you think this would affect people bringing it to GAO versus COFC?
What do you think, Ellie?
I don't know if the standard is that different to make people change. I think what's just going to happen is after one or two are dismissed, the contractors and their attorneys are just going to get more savvy on how to craft the language to get past that dismissal. I don't know. Like you see, when you're working on these protests and they come in, you're filing a motion to dismiss, but at the same time, you're still getting that agency report ready to go because there's no guarantee it's going to get dismissed. So I don't know if it's going to change much.
I think it might. I think you might see increased number of protests at COFC, but maybe not. I think it's important to understand sort of why we have GAO. Again, I conceptualize it as like a fast lane for expeditious resolution of protest. I understand why you don't want to release the agency report, but if you're going to get it anyway, once you go to COFC, I don't know. It's tough, right? There's already a decline that we talked about earlier. There's already an increase at the other fora. I don't know. It's going to be tough. We'll see, I guess.
I do think the one difference, though, is just that if you go to GAO, you still get seek a stay, which you don't get at COFC. You still have to file for a preliminary injunction, not always guaranteed to get it. So I do believe that is still one factor that brings people to GAO versus COFC. So that factor may still play into this, why they may choose to stay in the GAO forum. I don't know. It's hard to say. 100 days is a quick timeline, which is one reason why it's there, is they want these things to be done quickly so that we can move on. We can either go back, redo it, or we can award the contract, where COFC can take years.
So I know we talked about at the beginning that this came through the FY25 NDAA. Is there an effective date? Have we seen this taking taking hold yet? Is it just not happened, or is it not in effect yet? Do we know?
Yeah, that's a good question, Ed. So my understanding is GAO was supposed to provide Congress with some data and information, and that's what they did in July. They essentially said, hey, we have a pleading standard. We enforce it this way. We're going to reiterate it, or, you know, generate a new formulation in our bid protest decisions, but we're not actually going to change anything, is kind of the take I get. And so, no, there's nothing else happening as far as we can tell. Now, that may change in the 26th NDAA. Depending on when this gets released, that hasn't yet passed, right? Yeah. But as of today, that there's no change yet. So we'll see if anything comes out of it in the future. But again, this is important to know that there's been sort of a renewed interest in pleading standards that has happened a couple times in the last few decades.
GAO released the report, talked about their standards, talked about enforcing them. Ellie, was there anything else that they talked about in this report? I know you had a chance to kind of do a deep dive into it.
Yes. So the report talked about a few other things. Let's talk about the cost and fee shifting, which is another thing that Congress mentioned in the NDAA. So Section 885 required GAO to submit a proposal that included benchmarks comprising two categories of cost: average cost to DOW and GAO of a protest based on contract value, and lost profit rates of the awarded contractor when there is a protest.
That sounds to me like a big way of saying the loser pays model. Am I right on that one? Am I hearing you correctly?
Exactly. But here is the critical finding. Sufficient data was unavailable to calculate reliable benchmarks.
Yeah, agencies, turns out, they don't track that data, right? Ironically, that would actually increase the cost in dealing with the protesters if they had to track the time to deal with the protest, right?
So I had to, like, you know, billable hours in the federal government.
And now, we don't, that's why I joined the Army, to avoid
exactly
all that.
So DOW officials explain that they do not track any costs related to bid protests because there is no statutory requirement to do so. This includes both litigation-related costs for counsel and program counsel, and then also pragmatic costs resulting from complying with CICA stays, such as delay costs and costs for bridge contracts.
And did the DOW take a perspective on starting to collect this data, or was it Jason Floyd's perspective that really ruled the day, that we're not going to do billables?
DOW strongly indicated that the cost and administrative burden of collecting this data would outweigh the benefit.
Ed, that's Latin for no.
Given that DOW protests have declined significantly, 48%, and less than 2% of procurements are protested, DOW sees minimal need for this cost collection.
And not only did Congress ask GAO to figure out what data they had for agency costs, they also asked for them to get in contact with contractors to talk about lost profits and costs. GAO asked some trade groups, but they couldn't generalize anything from that data because, you know, that information is typically something the folks want to keep confidential, right? And how much they spend on protests and all that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So if we look at a contract being, let's take a round figure of 100 days, if it's being protested for 100 days, does the awardee always lose profits in that scenario? Do we know? How would we know?
So theoretically, the answer is no, not necessarily, right? So GAO noted that delay often results in deferred rather than lost profits. And that's what Congress focused on, lost profits. So think about the issue when a protest is resolved and the awardee is then told that he or she can actually perform. The government typically still has a need for those supplies or those services. So the period of performance or the date of delivery is just changed, right? It's just moved to the right. That's not to say there are no damages, but lost profits are not all that common.
So critically, GAO does not endorse creating a fee-shifting process for bid protests. They maintain that existing statutory authorities and procedures are sufficient to avoid the frivolous protests.
To me, reading the report, all of it sort of read like, hey, Congress, we don't really need or want this, but if you really want us to do it, let's narrow the focus down to a few specific areas.
So again, harkening back to my days in law school, we already talked about CivPro, but as a basic concept, isn't the American model everybody pays to go to court, and more the British model, the loser pays to go through? If I am remembering that correctly, and let's pretend for this podcast.
I think you're right, yeah.
Do we have any idea what the major policy considerations would be in Congress trying to shift that?
So I think the concern behind Congress's request for this was really just as simple as, hey, we want to avoid frivolous protests, right? The warfighter needs what the warfighter needs, and it's better for industry, for everyone in industry, really, if we could just hurry up and award these contracts without having to deal with some sort of frivolous protest. But GAO said, hey, there's a bunch of negative things that happen, potentially negative things that happen, if we go down this route. And Ellie, why don't you walk us through some of those things?
GAO outlined several serious negative consequences. First, it could have a chilling effect. It could deter firms, especially small businesses, which file the majority of the protests, from participating in protest process and federal procurements generally. So this reduces competition, which would potentially drive up government prices. And if you remember back to our podcast, when we did the 2025 NDAA, it really was all about small businesses and trying to get them more involved in the procurement process.
Absolutely.
And then second, the increased complexity and cost, a fee-shifting approach would require an individualized case-by-case evaluation of costs, adding additional time and complexity to the protest resolution process. I mean, we're talking about us tracking our hours of how much we're working on these protests, you know, the resources we're using. It would just be a lot more complex than it already is on a very short timeline.
And GAO said that they would have to do more work in determining like which protests are actually frivolous versus just not meeting their standard of pleading, which is, I thought, was pretty interesting.
And then third, GAO's conflict of interest. Requiring an unsuccessful protester to reimburse GAO for its costs creates the appearance of a conflict of interest and could lead to the perception that GAO is incentivized to dismiss protests to recover costs. So basically they're saying we want more people to lose so they can just pay for us.
That was kind of funny, right? Like it was kind of like GAO saying, hey, we don't want to be blamed for all these dismissals just because we have this profit incentive, right? That was funny. But GAO did say, like, if you want us to do this, here's two focus areas, right?
And I think these might be good ideas. So first, the incumbent contractor clause. So Congress could require the DOW to include a contract provision permitting the recoupment or withholding of profit or fee from an incumbent contractor who files a protest that is subsequently dismissed as legally or factually insufficient. This is a targeted approach aimed at concerns that incumbents file unmeritorious protests merely to extend their performance. However, DOW opposed this option, noting that costs outweigh the benefits and that it could negatively impact competition. And then second, GAO authority to recommend reimbursement. Congress could authorize GAO to recommend that a protester who protests is dismissed as legally or factually insufficient reimburse DOW and the awardee for cost and lost profit. This would require material, statutory, and administrative changes, as CICA currently only authorizes GAO to recommend actions for federal agencies to take.
This one's interesting because, like, what would the recourse be if the protester doesn't actually do what GAO recommends, right?
So this is interesting, too, because right now, CICA only has the ability to recommend actions for federal agencies. The fact that they would then have to have the power to even recommend or like tell a contractor, someone who's not even a part of the government, to do something.
Right. You want to talk about chilling effects, right? Why would somebody even want to take that risk if they know that the downside is they're going to have to pay their competitor for doing something that they wanted to do in the first place?
And then it goes back to the constitutional question about whether Article 3 has something to say about whether a legislative agency can make these kind of determinations, right? It's very interesting to me.
So in summary, Congress mandated GAO to find data to justify cost recovery. GAO could find no reliable data. And GAO recommends against implementing fee shifting at all because it would undermine competition and fairness, particularly for small businesses, which, as we've talked about, FY25 NDAA focused heavily on enhancing the ability for small businesses to do contracts with the U.S. government.
Yes, that's the consensus based on the GAO's official response. The GAO emphasized that any major reform efforts should be informed by reliable data, not speculation.
So we can put this in the same category of what we talked about earlier with the new standard, where they're saying acknowledge, Congress, we hear what you're trying to address in removing frivolous protests, but we believe everything we've been doing is accomplishing that mission. We have our standards. We're going to continue to enforce them. We have our penalties, fee structures, and ways that we deal with protests, and we're going to continue doing it that way. Our numbers are scaling in the right direction. Am I summarizing their position correctly?
I think so, yeah.
All right, well, thank you both very much. As always, I appreciate you breaking down a pretty complex area of law for those of us who haven't had the privilege of practicing in the contract side of it. It's a great overview of where the GAO protest process stands. I'll be interested to see if Congress takes that guidance from GAO or if in this or next year's NDAA, we start seeing more concrete guidance that they want GAO to follow.
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Ellie.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of The Far and Beyond. Join us next time as we dive deeper into federal acquisition law. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We love to hear from our listeners with ideas for future topics, for ideas of how we can do things better, not for personal criticisms of me because I can't hear them. I'm too sensitive. So please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. This information can be found on the show notes from today's episode.
I can't wait to criticize.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.